All right. Well, I certainly appreciate those of you that are here on time. The rest of the people are still eating ice cream, I believe. So let's get started. Again, I'm Steve Mosier. I am the president of the Executive Council this year. And I just want to say what an honor that's been to be on the Executive Council with some very special people. When I was asked if I would run for council, obviously it's something you think about very prayerfully. And I even remember thinking, gosh, what if Randy retires, you know? Because I've been on, you know, all kinds of search committees, and it's really hard work, you know, and it's a really important time in an organization. And, well, I just sort of forgot about that thought. And for a good year and a half, it was a real pleasure to serve under Randy's leadership, just to see how much he loves this organization and what a great job he did for the years that he was in that position. But then we had the work of finding a new executive director, and not only that, really, in a way, restructure the organization of the office, and with that, many other decisions, including project to really do some vision casting, which has been useful, I think, for Leslie and Vicky as they've begun their time of leadership in the organization. So one of the things I wanted to talk to you about is that a major project that we've had is to look at the Constitution and bylaws. Because we're in the 21st century, and this was a document that was first written in the 1940s, and it was revised in the 1990s, but there are some boilerplate items that just need to be in a constitution and bylaws for an organization like ours, a nonprofit, in the 21st century. And those are very non-controversial, and we will be presenting this, of course, to the entire organization. All the full members for a vote at some time in the future. But there are a few things that we are going to put before you, and we'd like to have a time of public comment involving restructuring a little bit the Executive Council membership and size. So what we're going to do, I'm not going to give any details about that right now, but we will be rolling this out for a period of comment, and then hopefully within the next year we might actually feel confident enough to send it up out for a vote of the entire membership. So just wanted you to know about that. There was an ad hoc committee that Lynn Billman created to work on this, and I want to recognize those people who were on that committee with me as chair. There was Catherine Applegate, Ruth Douglas Miller, Keith Miller, Dorothy Bors, Steve Hall, and Faith Tucker. So I really appreciate your help and working on that. And I think we'll all see that these will be positive recommendations for the future. People, please keep coming in. Let me go over the agenda. We will, after I'm finished, we'll have Leslie talk about the state of the ASA. And this has been so exciting for us on the Executive Council to see some of this vision being fulfilled. We'll have a financial overview and impact report by Vicky, and then we will induct our fellows, we'll honor our 50-year members, we'll also honor the memories of our friends who have passed on to glory this past year. Dorothy is going to talk about the next meeting that we're very excited about in the Boston area. And then we'll have a time for questions and answers. So I believe that's all that I wanted to talk about. Again, it's been a pleasure to be in this position this year. And I look forward to the decisions and initiatives that we'll be working on in the year to come. So, Leslie.
Thank you, Steve. Steve's doing a good job for us, and we can't council is also. We're very, very grateful to them. So I talked quite a bit last night at the banquet about the highlights of last year, and you've also got the impact report that you can read about more detail in. So I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time. I just want to highlight a few things. We had several 75th anniversary celebrations around the country, including the one that we had at the annual meeting at Azusa Pacific last year. We also had one at Wheaton College, and we had another one at First Presbyterian Church in Berkeley, California. So we made sure that we dragged that 75th anniversary celebration out as long as we could. And then, of course, we had a really great meeting last year at Azusa Pacific University, and we broke our attendance numbers then. We had a total of 290 attendees between the conference and the banquet. And of course, as you know, we far exceeded that this year with a total of 370. So that's something to be really excited about. We're pretty thrilled with that. I hope you are too. Then, of course, I spent some time talking about the local chapters campaign that has been going on both in the U.S. and Canada. In the U.S., we've added 6 new local chapters, in addition to reviving one that was kind of on life support in Houston, but now it's up and running again. In Canada, they've added 8 new chapters. And so, as we've mentioned before, we've been on the road a lot, doing a lot of travel, and that has really paid off. I've seen many people that we encountered in our travels that actually made it to the meeting. In fact, I'm not sure how many might be in this room, but if you happen to encounter us on the road this year, could you raise your hand? Wow, look at that. That's pretty cool. That's awesome. Thank you. So I'd like to also take a moment to look forward to this year. And one of the things we plan to continue doing is the expansion of the local chapters campaign. We are going to be pursuing some additional funding to expand that work and hopefully get some additional staff, at least part-time, to help us with some of that. Just during the course of this weekend, I've had 6 or 7 people approach me and say, we are interested in starting a chapter in our area. And so that's been really, really encouraging. So as I said, we've started six new chapters across the country this last year, and to have another 6 express interest. And that's in addition to a handful of others that we just haven't had time to get around to yet. So we're really excited about the enthusiasm for that. Another thing that goes hand in hand with our local chapters campaign is the outreach to communities. And what we're really hoping to do is to use the members that are committed to their local chapters to reach out to their own local communities, to their churches, to universities that are in their area, K-12 schools, faith-based organizations. As I've said many times this weekend, you know, we have a relatively small staff, and so we need to mobilize the membership to help with some of this work. Another project that we're trying to move forward with is an internship database. And what it'll be is networked across a number of different organizations, including ASA. So far, I'll name the organizations that I've talked to so far. Of course, ASA is on board with it. better be, right? We've also talked to the AAAS, in particular the Dozer Dialogue on Science, Ethics, and Religion. We've talked to BioLogos. We've talked to Reasons to Believe. We've talked to a number of CCCU schools. And this idea really surfaced for me when I was teaching at Azusa Pacific and realizing that there's so many students that really want internships, but a relatively limited number of internship opportunities on any one campus. And even more limited number of opportunities within the particular discipline that a student might be looking for. So this idea is to kind of create this matching database of opportunities and students that are looking for those opportunities. And actually, I should also mention that this is not just limited to students and grad students, undergrads and grad students, but also early career and even people who are further into their career. Perhaps, for example, one of the examples I cite often is, let's just say you're a pastor who realizes that they need to get a little bit more informed about this whole science and faith thing. Or perhaps you're in industry and you want to take some time out and take a sabbatical. Or anyway, so this internship opportunity will extend to people at all ages and stages in their life. So we're really excited with the reception that we've gotten from the organizations that we've shared this idea with. And this is one of the initiatives that we're planning to take forward to Templeton for a proposal. The next initiative I'd like to talk about is a children's program. This is an idea that came out of the CWIS group. And the idea was that, you know, wouldn't it be great if people could bring their children to the annual ASA meeting and the children would have something to do while the adults are in sessions. So this is something that, again, I've had another conversation with someone at Templeton, on staff at Templeton, about this idea, and there is a lot of interest in that as well. So it would involve creating really a children's track of activities together with educational opportunities geared to children and students. And then finally, the thing that I would like to mention is, again, the need for us to engage volunteers in the work of the ASA. As a small nonprofit with a limited budget, we really need help with these different initiatives that we're undertaking. So I would just like to encourage you to think about areas that you might be intrigued by and interested in getting involved in. We have so many opportunities, whether it's serving on one of our committees, running for executive council, helping with one of the new initiatives, helping write grants, writing articles for the journal, doing book reviews for the journal, helping with organizing annual meetings, and the list goes on. So I just ask that you would consider how you might get more involved with your organization. And with that, I'm going to turn it back over to Vicki, and she's going to go through some of the financials for us.
Good evening, everyone. Oops, going the wrong way. Excuse me. There we go. I see several of my volleyball teammates in the audience. I'm very impressed that you showered and got here. We had a lot of fun playing volleyball this year. It was significantly cooler than it was the last 2 years, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
And we even had our executive council member, John Wood, diving around the volleyball court.
That's
right. It's a lot of fun. Well, I've done enough financial presentations in my day to know that people often gloss over at financial presentations. So I'm going to do my very best to keep it from being dry and boring. On the end of those seats here are the impact reports. If you're on the end, if you wouldn't mind taking one and passing them down, and Steve will take a few and get them passed out too. I know we handed them out last night as well. But the items I want to talk about tonight are our fiscal 17 budget versus actual. Take a quick look at our balance sheet, designated funds, give you a capital campaign update, and then look at our fiscal 18 budget. So the first thing is the profit and loss budget versus actual, again for fiscal 17. So we're on a 331 year end. So we have just come off our fiscal 17 year end at the end of March. And we had a really great year. For those of you that were in the audience last year, you may remember that when we presented the budget, we were presenting a $65,000 plan deficit, which you see in the budget column there. And that was an intentional move on the part of the Executive Council to invest in a essentially two-person leadership model moving forward for the organization. We had received a restricted gift to the tune of $65,000 for the specific purpose of the leadership transition. So we went into the year with this planned deficit. We had some levers in mind that we would pull and work hard at trying to decrease that as best we can. And if you look at column one, I think we did a really good job of that. So if you look at our income, we exceeded our budget by almost $28,000 in total, primarily due to some grant funding that we received, and also again because of the great attendance that we had last year at APU, we exceeded our revenue budget. So again, in total, we landed about $28,000 higher than we had budgeted from an income standpoint. And then on the expense side, you'll see that we had budgeted $452,000. We came in at $442,000. So we again did better than we expected from an expense standpoint. So in combination of those two, instead of the $65,000 deficit, we landed at a $28,000 deficit, and it exceeded our goal by $38,000. So again, it was significantly better than what we had initially projected. And so you might ask, okay, the $27,500 deficit, where is that funded from? Well, that is funded from the $65,000 restricted gift that we had received the year before. So again, it was a really fantastic year for us from a financial standpoint. Then looking at our balance sheet, you'll see the assets always equal liabilities and equities. And we just, a week ago, met with our auditor, the CPA that performed our financial review. And his perception of the organization is that we have a strong balance sheet, and he was very complimentary. He does a lot of nonprofit work. And so looking at our assets, you'll see we have $110,000 in cash in the bank. We purchased the office condos 2.5 years ago. Some of you may remember that. And so we've got those on the books to the tune of $137,000. And then another big one is our endowment funds at $295,000. And so our endowment funds have been growing, and the return last year was about 6.5%. So total assets of about $566,000. So again, we're in a strong position from a financial statement purpose with the balance sheet. And then we also have some what we call designated funds, and these are funds that roll from year to year. So when you look at the cash that I just showed you on the balance sheet, that cash is designated out in these various funds. And so what you see here is you see the year-end balance and then the change from the previous year. So two of them that I just want to draw your attention to is the Student Scholarship Fund. As of the end of March, you'll see that we have about $1,000 in the Student Scholarship Fund. But as you heard me say last night, we have 60 students here, and we gave a good number of scholarships. So that number right now is actually $3,000 in the red. So we are looking to replenish the Student Scholarship Fund. And part of the reason we were able to give out a significant amount of scholarships this year was because when longstanding ASA member Walter Hearn had passed away, we set up a memorial fund in his honor. And so we received gifts to the tune of $3,000 in his honor, and those were funded into the Student Scholarship Fund too. So again, it enabled us to bring so many students to this year's conference, which was wonderful. So again, we're looking to replenish that fund. If any of you have heart for students and would love to help us with that, we'd certainly appreciate it. The reserve balance, I want to point out too, at $33,000 is this designated gift that I referred to earlier that we received 2 years ago. So the $27,500 deficit, again, was funded out of this reserve account. So we still have $33,000 left in that account. And the purpose of that account, again, was for the council to use as they saw fit, primarily for the leadership transition. And then, again, I mentioned the endowment. So we have about a total of $370,000 in these various accounts. And then moving on to our capital campaign, I want to give you a brief update on the campaign. For those of you that aren't familiar with our campaign, when we purchased the office condos, again, 2.5 years ago, for $150,000, we moved out of rental mode in Ipswich was the next town over, and we moved to Topsfield. We had been in rental mode for 30 years there, and we saw an opportunity and purchased these office condos and simultaneously launched a capital campaign, which many of you have participated in. So thank you very much for seeing the vision with us, because the capital campaign has enabled us to fund the condos, but in addition to that, the occupancy costs have decreased by 75%. So we're saving roughly $25,000 to $30,000 a year because of this purchase instead of throwing money out the door in rent. So it was a very wise financial move for the organization and helps our balance sheet as well. So we launched a 4-year campaign at the time. We're in year 4 right now, and we have about $14,000 left to fundraise to retire the campaign. So we are confident that we will achieve that this year. So again, thank you for all of you who have participated in that. And then finally, I want to talk about fiscal 18's budget. So again, we started our fiscal year on April 1st, and it runs through the end of March. So the middle column, again, is the budget from last year, which you saw in a previous slide. And then the first column is our budget for this year. And I'm going to point out the primary differences from last year. One of them is the grant funding that you see there, $50,000 in grant funding. As Leslie mentioned, we are poised to go after 3 Templeton grants very soon. And so we're very hopeful that we will receive some good news in regard to the grant funding. So we're anticipating $50,000 in this year's budget from grant funding. And again, with the annual meeting, we likely will exceed that goal there that you see of $115,000 because of the great attendance that we've had at this conference. So in total, we're looking at income of $431,000 versus the $387,000 last year. And again, it's primarily due to the grant funding that we're expecting. And then from an expense standpoint, what are we budgeting from an expense standpoint as compared to last year? So last year, you see we had budgeted $453,000. This year, we're budgeting $431,000. The reason for that is some cost restructuring that we've done over the last year and a half in a variety of areas has really enabled us to budget at a lower level for our expenses to the tune of $21,000. So the combination with the additional projected income with the cost restructuring that we've been able to achieve, our goal is to have a balanced budget of $364,000. So again, in summary, I am really encouraged. I've done a lot of nonprofit work in my time over the last 20 years, and I think the ASA is really poised from a financial standpoint. We're achieving fiscal stability and financial sustainability with a lot of the efforts that we've made, and I think we've got a lot to be thankful for. Excuse me. God has been good to us. And again, as I said last night, the ASA is a member-led and member-funded organization, and you'll see here that we rely heavily on charitable donations to make this all work. And I know many of you participate with the giving of your time, talent, and treasure, and we, again, are really grateful for all that you do. Thank you.
Thank you, Vicki. So now it is time for us to welcome our new class of fellows for this year. So what I would like to do is to have this list of fellows, who hopefully some of you are here at least, come up, and then I'm going to be giving out the certificates, and we'll have some photo opportunities to capture that special moment. So if you're here, please come forward. Scott Buchanan, Steve Kantakis, Michael Everest, Patrick Franklin, Cy Gart, Dominic Halsmer, Ben McFarlane, Clarence Meninga, Annabelle Pratt, Sarah Tolsma, and Janet Warren. So we have, four out of the list, but that's okay. So yes, please give them a hand. So Sierra, is this a good way for you to get photos, or would it be better for us to come down on the level?
I think that's a good way.
Michael, do you want to? Why don't you hold it so she can get it? Okay. Sai. Let's give them one more hand. Next, I would like to honor our 50-year members who are with us. So if you could also come up here, if you're present, Melvin Albright, Stanley Anderson, Norman Brockmeyer, Frank Fishman, David Newquist, David Rogers, and Melvin Swanson. So, I guess none of them are here with us tonight, so we can still clap for them. God can pass that along for us. And the next thing that I would like to do is have a time of remembrance and reflection on our members who have passed over the last year. So what I would like to do is, when I read each person's name, if you have some reflections that you would like to share for that person, I would love to have you guys participate in this just to honor their memory. So we'll start with George Bate. Anyone know George?
Yeah.
No one? Okay. John Bergeson? Yeah.
He liked to call himself Bergie, and Bergie and I and a few others were the pioneers in internet communication about ASA matters, and back in the days when you had a 300 baud modem and it was very difficult to get the stop bit set right and so forth. So we were among the first to play around with that.
Awesome. Thanks, Paul. Randy?
And Bergie was a fellow IBM employee who specialized in surveys, and he helped me early on in advising about how to style some of the surveys we did in ASA. But above all, he was a good contributor.
Terrific. Thanks, Randy. Anyone else? Terry?
So following up on what Paul said, Bergie was an active member of the ASA email discussion group that we had for many, many years before we moved to different technologies. And he was, I think Bergie and I disagreed about almost everything, at least on the list. And so he was a very worthy email sparring partner, for me at least. And I know many of you watched some of those discussions and participated in them as well.
Fun. Thanks. Yeah.
I was just going to say, on those listservs, he was very compassionate, very generous to others. That was his major concern.
Awesome. That's nice. Thanks. What about Fred Hafner? Well, we'll move on to Walt Hearn.
Skip him, or we're never going to get to the rest of the list.
Yeah. Well, would anyone like to kind of be the representative to say something about Walt? I know we all have very fond memories of Walt. Ruth?
Walt was probably one of the first folks we met at our very first ASA meeting in 1985. Just, always in shorts and always with a ponytail. You could. Is this what ASA is like? I want to be here. I want to be with you. The letters in the newsletters. Just think of what was me. Kept us all, everybody was Walt's friend. Nobody could ever cross him. I don't know that I ever saw him cross. It's just if any of us could be like Walt, what more could we ask or go before God?
Thank you. John, did you want to say?
Yeah, I've turned into an old guy, and I was quite surprised last year to find myself up in the front with Walt. What a privilege to be there with him and to share those few days. Of course, I, like many of us here, heard about Walt, knew about Woe, the weary old editor, long before I met him. When I went to Berkeley in 1977, he became my mentor, Walt and Jenny. And I've been passing his advice on, even this weekend, again and again to other people. And I'm sure the ripples of his influence will continue through this organization and way beyond. Walt and Jenny are sui generis. They're unique in the kingdom, and we are blessed and gifted by their faithfulness. Mm-hmm. Walt, at Wheaton College in the early 1960s, opens up biochemistry and the challenges of that for the faith, does all kinds of things, and we could tell lots of stories.
Indeed, so, we could.
The Lord bless his memory.
Vicki, do you want to say something?
Yeah, I had the opportunity to attend Walt's memorial service just a couple of months ago, and I gave a tribute on behalf of the ASA, and it was really a special time. My tribute's on the website, so you can read it there.
I've only known him for 3 years, but I feel like I've known him my whole life, because like you said, he's one of these people that makes you feel really special. And you know, as I said last year, I think it was a real honor to have him. It was his last hurrah, and you know, he's an ASA stalwart. And as I have traveled the country, I can't tell you the number of people that have said that they know Walt and the influence that he has had in their lives. And he's been a huge encouragement to the staff at the ASA. We could regularly count on him sending a note with his very faithful quarterly check that he would send. And it was always so encouraging. He was at our Berkeley event, and Leslie and I picked he and Jitty up. We live in Berkeley in the Troll House. It's a really unique house. Randy and I had the opportunity to be there with some other ASA members. But he really was a neat guy. They were a really neat couple. Like you said, they kind of go hand in hand. But I'll never forget the last communication that we got from him. It was just a few months before he passed away, and we got a note in the wake of the Christmas letter. I'm looking over at Sharon and Lynn that we had sent. We had done a photo at our Christmas party, and Walt, in his witty, clever way, sent this long, just so encouraging. He was so encouraging to us all the time. And he took the photo, and he went down the photo, and it was Leslie the boss, and Vicky the best, and Lynn the master of the English language, and Sharon the mysterious one, because Sharon's the new one on board, and Randy the tall one. And he just had a way about him that was just, it's just unbelievable. And so I don't know what else to say, but you know, he was a one of a kind, and I know this is really hard on Ginny. I was invited back over to their house after the memorial service. It was a wonderful service, testimony of a life well lived, and just please be praying for her, because I know this is really hard for her. But he lived an amazing life.
It's a special man.
Yeah,
I remember. At the meeting at APU last year, after you got up and, you know, kind of gave the tribute to him, and you referred to him as a stalwart, and then when he got up and to give his kind of response, the first thing he said was, "What kind of wart did she call me?" But that was just a reflection of his special way about him and his great sense of humor. Jack?
Well, I moved to the Bay Area. 1978, and some of the folk were in the very active, vigorous San Francisco Bay section, including John and others. But when Walt was there and vigorous, the chapter thrived. When he began to decline and other people passed away or moved, the chapter declined. We needed a new Walt. But talking about all of you people that Walt made to feel special, I thought it was me. And then it turns out all these people were special too.
Hannah.
As some of you know, I edited the ASA newsletter for about a year and a half, and I was keenly aware that it was unlikely I would live up completely to Walt. But it was a great pleasure to meet him last summer and get to hear his witty conversation in person. And I'm very glad to say he did also give me a name. So if he was the weary old editor, and then Emily, who served next, I guess was the eager young editor. So he told me perhaps I could be the able, charming editor.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you. Steve. Thank you. Okay, the next one on our list is Herbert Hergert. Does anyone have any remembrances to share for Herbert?
Okay. Fred Hinkernell? Randy?
Fred and his wife were superintendents here, and I still remember the first few years I was with ASA. It was Fred I turned to help organize meetings of the fellows here at the meeting, and he would often call and talk. And of course, his son is now an ASA member as a result, and we've talked quite a bit. So he was a big help to me, especially in the first 5 years or so before he got ill.
Great, thanks. Okay, next we have Kenneth Hoover. Yeah, Ken.
Well, I may be the only one here that knows him. I grew up in the same community. He and Dad were, when Messiah College in its in the 1960s, only had about 300 students, and all the faculty members were significant. So to me, he was always Dr. Hoover. You grow up as a child, and it's always Dr. Hoover. Even as I became an adult, I still could never call him K.B. Hoover like everybody else. He was still always in my brain, still Dr. Hoover. And my mother went back to school when I was in college there, and we both were in Dr. Hoover's biology class. And it lived to 100, and it was either 102 or 103.
Wow.
I saw him about 3 or 4 years ago. He was a gentleman who lost two wives and was married to the third wife, so that was sort of a cultural thing around the side college. So he was part of my growing up process.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
My father is 82 and a half and still called Ken Dr. Hoover. My father's a landscaper and regarded Dr. Hoover as a maker for a long time. And he was a much loved figure at the side of this.
Thank you. Okay. Carol Karkalitz. Anyone? Okay. Teresa Nessman.
Teresa was born in Cuba. Her parents were doing missionary work in agriculture. And then as things got a little heated there, they had to leave and served in Costa Rica for a while. They came back to the States, and Teresa went on to be a biology teacher, but then went on to graduate school and got her doctorate. She had a real passion for working in mainly research of teenagers, of various, because she had so much experience overseas, she really felt for the kids that were coming in as immigrants and the problems they had. So that was her focus. She became involved in an organization that I have been involved with, Haitian American Friendship Foundation, which was a small community in the Northern Plateau of Haiti, which was mainly a school, but then developed into the community programs. And as she had gone on to become a research professor, the need was such 1 year that she decided that she would take a whole year off and go to Haiti and help out. And it just happened to coincide with right after the earthquake. Mm. And the timing was amazing for her to be able to be there to help. Mm. She died in her mid-50s. She was a young gal and suffered a couple of years, very tough times of cancer. And the sad thing was she was the one that was looking after her parents. And so that left quite a hole in their life. In fact, her dad died within 6 months after that.
Oh, wow.
But Teresa is a beautiful person, but so quiet. I doubt any of you probably have ever met her, and it was just a coincidence of really through Echo that we had gotten to know her dad and her beautiful person.
Thank you, Bonnie. Paul Ribby?
Hi.
Steve.
Okay. Yep. Paul's a fellow geologist. He was one of the original founders of the Affiliation of Christian Geologists, very active with that group, editor of our ACG newsletter for quite a number of years, but a really central contributor to that particular group of Christians in the geology.
Thanks, Keith.
Paul was my spiritual mentor at Virginia Tech, where he was a professor of mineralogy. He once mentioned something in class about God, just kind of an offhand comment. I found out that he was an advisor to InterVarsity Christian Fellowship. At that time, I was a seeker, and so I knocked on his door one day and started asking him questions about geology and the Bible, because I'd been given a copy of a book by Henry Morris, and I was just a little confused, and that just began an incredible relationship. I accepted Christ in the dining room table one Sunday after church, and really his academic work with feldspars was just tent making. He was an elder in a Plymouth Brethren Church, Blacksburg Christian Fellowship. So that meant he was really a co-pastor in that church. He encouraged many, many people through the years, and was a really special man.
Thank you. Yeah.
Pardon my voice. I hope you'll be able to hear me all right. Paul was probably one of the most outstanding mineralogists in the United States, not the world. Steve has already mentioned it. Feldspar. He was also very active as editor of the books that are published by the Mineralogical Society of America. One of his crowning achievements was the editorship of Reviews of Mineralogy. I think that was the title, something similar to that. And I don't know how many he edited, but they're up in the 70s now. A huge volume was about that thick. And it was devoted to one mineral or one mineral group or something, a particular topic in mineralogy. It's just a spectacular achievement. He didn't write them all, but he rounded up all the people to write the paper. And Paul was in charge of publishing books. And he was gracious enough to publish one of mine, so I love the guy. One of the things that really impressed me, I forget where it was that I heard him preach, he was a terrific lay preacher. And wow, he was, that's all I can say. I look forward to seeing him again.
Thank you.
This is really strange when the gentleman mentioned Virginia Tech and DCF.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm looking at these names and Paul Ritz's name looks familiar. This is my first meeting.
Wow.
I was at UNICEF for 4 years. David Kingston was my advisor.
Oh, yeah, sure.
He invited me to UNICEF.
Yeah.
Paul Rue was a bivocational elder, one of six or seven. There was one paid pastor and five or six unpaid pastors, which were called elders. My advisor was one of them. So I knew him this year. I didn't know he was ASI.
Wow.
That's great.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that. And John Vercati. Yeah, I may have not said his last name correctly.
His last name is Vercade.
Vercade.
It's a Dutch name, I believe. I knew John because we were in the same research group in the late 1950s at the University of Illinois. Mm-hmm. In fact, this was in the days when it was allowed to have desks in the laboratory, and we sat at adjacent desks. I didn't know John was a Christian when he was a graduate student. Mm-hmm. We discovered that later. was a very good inorganic chemist. He went on to become a professor at Iowa State. I think he spent his entire career there. He published many, many papers on transition metal chemistry, and published at least one book, I believe. It was a book on molecular orbital theory, emphasizing group theory. The last time I saw him was at the ASA meeting, I believe, last year at the Institute of Pacific. No. I didn't know if he was ill and was surprised and shocked to learn that he had, had passed away. He was a trumpet player. He played the trumpet in his church, which I think was a Christian Reformed church. And he also, he played the trumpet sort of a voluntary at the beginning of every National American Chemical Society.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Some of you who were chemists in the ACS meetings may have heard him play the trumpet.
That's neat.
He was a very, very fine fellow, and sorry, he's got a lot of ideas.
Thanks for sharing that. Anyone else? Okay, I'd like to take a moment and pray, so please bow with me. Father God, we thank you for this time of remembrance for each of these fine people, Lord. It's obvious that they have touched many in their time on earth. And we just pray for those loved ones, family, and friends that they leave behind. We just ask that you would be with each one and comfort them, surround them with other people who can comfort and love them. Lord, we just thank you for, again, the impact that they've had, and we commit them to your eternal care and look forward to the day that we'll be reunited with them in your kingdom. I just want to mention each one of them to you as we commit them to your care. George Bate, John Bergeson, Fred Hafner, Walter Hearn, Herbert Hergert, Fred Hinkernell, Kenneth Hoover, O. Carol Karkalitz, Teresa Nessman, Paul Ribb, John Vercade. We remember them with love and respect and ask that you would strengthen us and empower us to carry on the traditions of the ASA that they were so faithful to. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Okay, I believe now is time for Dorothy to come up and talk about next year's meeting. Sharon is on it. Thank you.
That's later. Hold on here. Here we go. This is what we need. I'll let him.
Thank you. I'll just spend about 3 minutes here. I did spend the bulk of the last hour puzzling about how to do a transition from talking about loved people who have passed away to an exciting opportunity next summer. But thankfully, we've had a transitional prayer. So I am hoping that we can look forward. And I'm excited that this will be in Massachusetts next year at my own home school. We'll be at Gordon College this time next year. A colleague of mine in the chemistry department, Michael Paul, will be the program chair, and I and another person on staff will be local arrangement chairs. The program will have a theme of bioethics and biotechnology, although, of course, we will have sessions on many other topics as well. And you can see some pictures of the local area here. We are in a land of biotechnology and many, many biotech firms. And so part of this is a local interest. But we have certain speakers already lined up, and one, of course, is Francis Collins. Another is Nigel Cameron, who's the president for the Center for Policy on Emerging Technology. And he is interested in biotech and the human future and how that's going to change our role as humans. Professor Doug Laufenberger from MIT is confirmed as a speaker as well. Jeff Schloss, who many of you know, is at Westmont College. He'll be coming to be a speaker. And Ming Zhang, who's one of my colleagues at Gordon, who's a plant biotechnologist and crop breeding expert, will be a speaker as well. In addition, we have invited and are hoping to have Johnny Erickson Tada. She is a very famous person with disabilities and often speaks on disability and is an author. So we have Science with a Mission, which is an organization focused on making inexpensive medical testing for underserved communities. We'll have a workshop. And then I'm just going to show some pictures of things to do around. We're still setting up all the field trips, but if you can imagine, we have a wild array of fun things to do. This is the campus. That's the koi pond right there. It's one of my favorite places in the world. This is the Ken Olson Science Center. That's me and students back before I went gray. And there's a variety of other things, pictures from campus. The stone building is our administration building. But actually, that part you enter is not the part that looks like a ruin. That's sort of a historic thing. And then, of course, welcome to exciting place to be. We were near MIT. We're near downtown Boston. Is easily accessible. You could take your family on the Freedom Trail. We're hoping to get a gang to go down to the Harvard Museum of Natural History, and that has a famous glass flowers exhibit that is well worth seeing if you've never been there before. Of course, we have the Red Sox, for those of you interested. I can't guarantee what we'll be able to do with them, and we have whales. So we'll try to arrange some type of whale watch, and we've got all sorts of outdoor things that we can do with Mass Audubon and trustees of reservations sites around. Of course, we have the ocean. So we've got beautiful beaches and then a focus on sustainability in the region. So this is an exciting time. I am hoping that we have a wonderful time together, and I'm excited to invite you to our home.
Arnold Sikkema will be up next to give some news from the CSCA.
So, yes, we look forward to seeing you in Massachusetts 2018. So yes, I'm Arnold Sikkema. I'm the past president of CSCA, and this coming year we have a really unique opportunity to have an additional special conference targeted specifically as a Canadian conference on science and Christianity. But of course, you're all welcome, and you can invite anyone to come as well. It's of course in the Pacific Northwest, as you would call it, and it's just it's called Vancouver for us in Canada. The dates are May 11 to 14. So some of you may be able to take in two national conferences. May 11 to 14 is around the time of year when American colleges are finishing up. So if you're in the area, if you'd like to travel to Vancouver once again, 2004 was the annual ASA-CSEA meeting at Trinity Western. This conference will be held at Trinity Western University as well. And the title of the conference is From Sea to Sea to Sky, Science and Christianity in Canada. From Sea to Sea is the English translation of the Canadian motto. The motto of Canada is Ad Mare Usque Ad Mare, which is coming from Psalm 72, which expresses the fact that the Lord has dominion from sea to sea. And we added in the to sky as well to emphasize a few points about the mountains connecting with the sea, but also directing our eyes to the heavens and in connection with the sovereignty of God and our work in science and faith across the range of disciplines for God's glory. Here are some of the plenaries that we have lined up. Dennis Danielson will be speaking on Copernicus. Janet Danielson will be doing a musical contribution called Reverberations of the Cosmos, along with readings from the Book of the Cosmos by her husband Dennis. Catherine Hayhoe, who was here, will be speaking in Vancouver as well. Richard Middleton from Northeastern will be speaking on probably something like Genesis and Evolution. And we have a really interesting public figure in Canada recently appointed as the president of the University of British Columbia, one of Canada's largest public universities. And he's outspoken about his faith, active in InterVarsity in the past, and in the field of medicine and biology as well. And so we're hoping to have him. Well, he will be speaking about science and faith and how that figures in a Canadian public leadership position. And we'll also be watching a film written and performed by people from Regent College, which is nearby. So we're collaborating with them on putting on this film followed with a panel. And the film is called Making Peace with Creation. It was premiered in December at Regent College. This is all with funding from the Templeton World Charity Foundation. And we invite you to attend this and to attend the meeting in August as well. Typically, Canadians have made up about 10% of the ASA membership and also conference attendees. And we don't expect that we will be overwhelmed by Americans attending this conference as well, but we certainly would welcome anyone who is able to make it to this one. It's a different time of year than you're used to, perhaps, but the same sort of typical schedule, Friday evening until Monday noon. We also hope to attract a number of folks from the local area through some public events open to those of them who have been attending our public lectures over the years, even if they aren't members. So thank you for the opportunity to share that with you as well.